switching gears and going from talking stick to sandals. Like, there you had probably the complete opposite feeling of, you know, feature overload. What was the most difficult thing about going from, I think it was 132 holes to 18?
Well, you know, Andy, it was, we always knew, I mean, yes, we had many, many holes, 132, 136, I can't remember exactly now. They're still, most of them, I think, are still on a little piece of paper I used to carry around in my pocket. Mm-hmm. When I would go up there, and there were these tiny little marks, you know, that didn't mean anything to anyone but me, personally. I knew where one of those little marks was. I could go out and find it and stuff for individual holes. But as soon as you started to say, I really want this hole, most often that cut across some of the other potential holes. So you started eliminating things. The big thing with Sand Hills is trying to truly believe going into it as you start construction that you pick the best one. And that's just pure judgment calls. It's do we like the sequence of the holes? Do we like the directions? Do we like the feel as you're progressing? Do we like the way the course is moving through the bigger dunes and the softer dunes? We're trying to get it, again, to your point, variety. You know, I've heard people who said, oh, gee, you should have put more holes up in those giant dunes. Well, understand that from a visual perspective, but I've played on the ground and at Sand Hills and you know, walking and playing golf, and we just felt like it should be a nice combination of that landscape, big dunes, small dunes, in between sizes. Mm-hmm. And so you just try to start to analyze all the different, you find individual holes that you'd really like to build, but you try to then start figuring out what's the circulation pattern, how best to get around this property in this interesting fashion and showcase the most interesting elements, and what are the best individual holes to do that. And pretty soon you start picking a few, and a lot of others start following by the way. But it's one of our biggest concerns in that was that we finished the course and then look back and say, oh, we should have done that. We should have done that, you know. And I can very candidly say, I think if you talk to Ben, certainly if you talk to me, I think we would both very quickly say, no, we're happy with the ones we picked.
Feelings you have to be in the bed.
I think I could see that perspective, but I actually do believe we do feel it. I don't think we've been trying to talk ourselves into it. I remember playing golf out there before the course opened, just Ben and me.
Yeah.
We played, we were walking down. I remember we got to the 17th hole, and, you know, of course, we both knew all the different discussions that had gone on, different ways to go. And I remember looking at Ben and saying, would you change anything? And he said, no. And that's just the two of us standing there. There's no one listening. Yeah. There's no one. It's not like, God, we probably should have taken that hole over there or that one instead of this. There was none of that. We were very comfortable. And I think for both of us, that was real. I mean, if we had had any inclination that, no, we missed it, we would have admitted. And so I don't think it's just like we just said it to make ourselves feel better, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Kyle Hagelin, who was on the podcast, said there was a big argument with you and Dick Youngscat about the fourth green.
Oh, God.
And, you move some stuff around there. And who do you think, do you think Dick would admit you were right? No.
You'd have to ask Dick. Dick's such a good friend. I just think the absolute world of Dick. And he wasn't very happy with me. And he was not happy with me. But you'd have to ask Dick what his opinion of that is. But yeah, he was, he always envisioned, he and I had gone out there actually one day, and I don't think I'm saying something I shouldn't say, but Dick might disagree with this, but I don't think it's so. But we had gone out there one day, just the two of us, and I told Dick that we were thinking about building a green up there, where it is. Uh-huh. And we were going to use that, what became that big blowout bunker short left, to create the sand to then pile against the natural dune to make the green. And it was going to be one sort of inspired by the fifth green at Prairie Dunes, in case you happen to know that, where Maxwell did a very similar thing. Pile of sand out next, on, off the side of a dune, then with a drop off, you know, beside that green. And Dick was talking to me. He said, Bill, why don't you build a green down here low to the right? And Dick didn't often do that type of stuff. You know, he just said, I want you to do the least of the property you can. And that's why I think he was saying, why don't you build a green down here low to the right? Because he's going, why would you dig that sand out there and pile it up there to build a green when you could just build it down here low, right? And Ben and I talked about this quite a bit. And we both just felt like it was more interesting sitting up there. Yeah. And so I went through all that with Dick, and he and I, and at the end of that day, I sincerely believed that Dick was in agreement we'd build the green up there high left. Dick sincerely believed we were in agreement we were going to build it down there low right. And so we went our separate ways, and Dick went off for, I don't know, a few days. I can't remember. He was usually there all the time, but he went off for a few days. And meanwhile, went up there the very next day and started building the green up top. And,
what do they say when the cat's away, the mice
come? Yeah, exactly. So Dick came back. He was not happy. It was the only time we really, I don't think he spoke to me for like 2 weeks thereafter. And I was spending most all the summer up there, so he was not very happy with me. But the most, at least for me, maybe the most amusing part is the first picture ever published of the Sand Hills Golf Club. Ron Whitten from Golf Digest was up there. And as the course was just about grown in, Ron was taking some photographs, and he wrote a piece about the Sand Hills. And there's a double page spread, one photograph of the fourth green. And Dick saw that. And he got, he looked at me and goes, you did this? I know you did this. I know you set this up. He was convinced, which I had nothing to do. I didn't even know they were going to, I knew Ron had been up there and was going to do a piece about it, but no idea what picture they were going to make. But to this day, Dick's convinced that I had that set up with Ron to run that thing. Picture, double page picture of the fourth hole at the Sand Hills.
With regard to the Dick, with him being a successful building architect, do you think that helps with him being, you know, the working with you guys like in a little bit more hands off role? Like, do you think him being an architect helped the success of that project?
Well, I think that was a very big contributing factor. His understanding building in general and design in the process. But Andy, he's Dick Youngskap, simply the only human being I've ever met that I truly believe could pull that project off. Mm-hmm. As much as I admire so many people for whom we've worked and people I've met who've been so successful, I don't know anyone else that could have made that happen. The combination of patience, but concept and the ability to communicate with the local community, the ranching community there, and then just to convince anyone that's had any hope possibility. I mean, you put it in the context, people look back now probably and say, oh, well, okay, yeah, it happened. Well, you can only imagine trying to go out and convince someone, because Dick's not a wealthy man, and go out and try to convince someone that they should invest in the building of a golf course in Sand Hills, Nebraska, where the population base averages 2 people per square mile. And you know, it's just like, really? You're going to do this? And I remember a guy that Ben and I knew very well from back east, and he'd gone out there to look at it. And he summed it all up to me when he called. He goes, Bill, there are no people. There's no one there. You're going to build a house. Damn. And so, yeah, Dick, his ability to pull off that and the faith that people who invested with him had in Dick, it wasn't in us, and it wasn't in that concept, because the concept was just like seeing pure folly. Mm-hmm. And you know, here are Crump's folly at Pine Valley. Well, it, you know, books are written about that. But Dick's, this idea of going out there and doing this was perceived by almost everyone who saw it as absolute folly.
What was you and Ben's reaction when he first followed you and told you the idea? Like, without seeing the study?
Well, first of all, Andy, Ben had seen pictures in old National Geographic magazine. I can't remember from when. Could have been the 60s, late 1960s. But he had seen pictures in an article that was in National Geographic about the sand hills of Nebraska. And it was a fairly lengthy article. It had stories of ranching families and things, but talked about the geology of the site and all the sand dunes and ridges. So Ben remembered those photographs of those dunes from that article. I had first heard about the sand hills in Nebraska from Doug Peterson, who was longtime superintendent of Prairie Dunes. Later, ended up coming to be the superintendent of the Austin Golf Club that we did in Austin. But I remember back in the 1980s walking with Doug down the eighth hole at Prairie Dunes, and I made some comments. And can you imagine having a piece of property like this to build a course on? And Doug was originally from Nebraska. And he looked at me in his very gravelly voice. He says, Bill, I know where there's land better than this. I go, what? You know, where is it? He said, Nebraska. Well, I'd never been in the state of Nebraska. I thought Nebraska was just flat cornfields, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff. He goes, no, there's a big sand dune area. He said, I've been through it many times. He said, it's fabulous. He said, probably never be a golf course there because there are no people. He said, but he said, it's fabulous land for golf. Ron Whitten from Golf Digest, you know, from Nebraska.
Yeah.
He knew about it. But the fact that when Dick called, I remember vividly being in the office with Ben and Scott Sayers, our business manager, all these years. And Dick got on, you know, we got on a conference call for Dick. And he said, guys, I'm calling to see if you have any interest in coming to the sand hills of Nebraska to look at a site. Well, I think he started off saying, look at a site in Nebraska. There's, you know. Of course, Dick can't see us. We're just sitting there. We're listening. And all of a sudden, he says, in a park called the Sand Hills of Nebraska. I'm sure you've never heard of it. I look at Ben. He looks at me. And he thought of that National Geographic thing, and I thought of Doug Pearson.
Yeah.
Here we go. We'll be there. We'll come see it.
That's amazing. It's when you drive in there, you see golf everywhere, but I imagine building it is just, I think the thing that sticks out to me, there are spectacular green complexes, but the scale and having that scale to be able to use it in a strategic way, I mean, that's got to be so rare on all your sites to have that kind of intimidation factor with the bunkers, right?
Well, and the bunkers certainly were inspired by just the natural blowouts that occur from wind erosion there in the sand hills. And so, you know, we saw those and said, okay, that needs to be the model for the bunkers out here. And, of course, the ranchers, whom we got to know very well through the process, but they all thought we were just completely lost our minds because they're trying to get those sandy blowouts to heal over, you know, so they don't just keep getting bigger and bigger. And here we are making some. And but it was interesting to listen. One of the ranchers was out there one day, and I was talking about something. I said, well, I think we're going to make this sandy blowout over here. And he goes, well, you can, but it would never occur naturally there. And, well, okay, so that's faced the wrong direction. And, you know, cattle don't go through there. And most of the blowouts occurred when there was some traffic pattern going through up a dune. It'd wear a spot, and then pretty soon the wind would start blowing in and blowing it. Like a giant bunker that's there left of 18 in the sand hills. That's there because of the windmill that's there. Because the cows would go through, and they'd always go to the windmill. They'd come down from the top, down the dunes. They'd come from the bottom. They'd come across what's in front of number one at the sand hill. And so when we got there, that was just this magnificent sandy expanse and thing, all caused by the cattle coming down to the windmill that pumped the water into the holding tank there.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot of people have been asking you about camping out on sites and routing, and I have to apologize. You know, one of your friends told me you did that, and
I think I know who that friend was. Yeah, I had a young guy walk up to me in Branson not long ago who was working on the course, and he asked me that same thing. He says, is it true that you take a tent and pitch tent out on the site and start walking and following all the animal trails? And I go, I think that rumor has been embellished. No, I had never pitched a tent out on the site. And that, have I followed animal trails? Absolutely. It's been my sense walking sites, particularly wooded, hilly sites, that animals figure out the easiest way to traverse the property. And generally it's in search of water or going to and from water. But they find the ways to get around the severe parts of the property in the least taxing way. So if you're going to a site, you know, not anything to begin, but you find a nice deer trail, cattle trail, whatever, elk trail, whatever it may be, generally, it's going to find its way from high ground to low ground, probably back to high ground, in a way that's not horrible to walk. Plus, if you're in the bushes in the woods, you already got a bit of a trail to follow.
You're not finding it as much.
Exactly. So it's we always start out trying to determine the circulation pattern around the piece of property and find the most interesting parts, elements of the property. And then if you were to go out there and just walk that property to see it, not even thinking about golf, if you were to go out there and spend the day walking around that property and try to see the interesting parts, the vistas, the long-term vistas, but also maybe the rock outcroppings or interesting trees or interesting stream or what break, whatever it might be. Once you knew those things were there, how would you go walk about for the day and do it where you could see those things and not feel like you're mountain climbing or you're not feeling like you're just doing it where it's just a physical challenge? How would you make it an enjoyable walk through property? So we sort of look at routing like that. How would you walk through this? How would you go through this property and touch upon the most interesting elements and do it in a way that's not physically, overly physically taxing? So that's kind of how we do that. But yeah, the animal trails play into that. I made the mistake, and I said that some years ago. Ben and I were doing an interview with the media thing for the PGA Senior Championship at Colorado Golf Club. And during that, they had someone asked the question about, we hear you sometimes walk around on animal trails. And so I basically said what I just said. Next thing I know, I think it was Gary Koch, I'm not sure, but one of the commentators for the championship says this out on the air, and it comes out across like, oh, they just lay out the holes based on the animal trails. You know, well, it's not quite right. but it is a good guide. Yeah. Abandoned Trails. Abandoned Trails was full of trails, both animal trails and hiking trails. So that's why it has that name, mm-hmm. Trails. I used to walk out there for days and days and days and study the property and make notes and maps and things. But some of that stuff, the gorse and stuff, you could physically walk through anyway.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of holes in abandoned trails that were laid out, kind of following trails. Mm-hmm.
As if you had run with the camping story, you would have inspired a whole new generation of architects that spent their time camping on their sites.
Yeah, I know. When you read those stories about Perry Maxwell at Prairie Dunes, supposedly, you know, being out there with some apples and water and a tent. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Maxwell had already lost one leg by this time. I doubt that he was out in the sand in the dunes there, Prairie Dunes. Mm-hmm. You know, well, he may have had apples and water with him and a way to get around, but I doubt that he was just camping out out there, you know.